Hi, thanks for joining us this morning. I'm Chrissy Mernon, and my guests are from Wildlife Rescue and Rehabilitation. Diana Reyes is the Chief Executive and Development Officer, and Kelly McCoy is the Director of Animal Operations. Wildlife Rescue and Rehabilitation has been in our community for over 40 years, 41 years now, correct?
Yes.
And founded by Lynn Cuney.
Yes, founded by Lynn Cuney in her house and backyard in this little San Antonio neighborhood.
What was going on that she needed to put together an organization?
Well, you know, in all my conversations with Lynn, and we've had many, she has just always had this connection with and just feeling regarding animals and our environment. And she really kind of, for lack of a better way of saying it, felt a calling to help animals. And she just saw some animals in her surrounding area having some, you know, facing some issues, and she felt she needed to do something. And who knew that 41 years later we would be in a 212-acre sanctuary in the hill country? So difference.
How did it go from her house to this sanctuary?
She's a very passionate woman. For those that have met her know this, with lots of drive, and she worked very hard. She printed a newsletter, you know, got a newsletter printed, started gaining some donors, found some people who really cared about the issues that animals and wildlife were facing, and just kind of went from there. You know, she's had some very loyal donors from the beginning that are still with us today. And we've just been very fortunate. We went from, the organization went from her backyard to another area in the San Antonio area, you know, region. And then from there went to Burney, Texas. And from Burney, thanks to an anonymous gift from a donor, we were able to purchase, you know, at first it was 187 acres. And then another acreage came, you know, land came available next door. So, you know, next door to our property. So we ended up buying it. Now we're 212.
Where are you located now?
In Candelia, Texas, is our large, you know, sanctuary and animal hospital. We actually opened up a new location this past September on Bassey Road. Oh, it's our Sherman Animal Care Complex, and it's a really important facility because most of the animals that people find that are orphaned and need assistance or injured, they come into our facility through our San Antonio location. Mm-hmm. And thanks to our volunteers and dedicated staff, we're able to transport animals every day to Candelia, especially those that need it, need to see our veterinary staff. And so we're able to get those animals there. So, you know, that complex is really important for us. And it's the new complex has also given us ability to, provide educational workshops, all kinds of volunteer trainings, because we actually have an education center, which we didn't have in our other location.
You had previously you had a house off of McCullough?
Yes. Thanks to the generous donation of Phyllis and Roger Sherman, we were able to purchase, it was about 1,400 square foot home that we, you know, did some renovations to, built a cattery, you know, were able to provide, you know, what we needed at the time. And so what we found out very quickly, and I think, you know, Kelly can attest this, she's been with us for several years now, is that we outgrew that space very fast. Mm-hmm. And we realized that we really needed not only to have a bigger space to provide more care for, you know, animals with more care, but we needed a space to really help us fulfill our mission in education and advocacy for animals. And so having that education center, having a place where people can come and learn about who we are and what we do and the services we have available, we just really felt that need was important to address. And so that's why we have our building now.
So where is your new building?
1354 Bassey Road. It's between San Pedro and Blanco Road on Bassey. Mm-hmm. And so it's been working out well. We've seen quite a bit of animals come through. We haven't gone through a baby season yet, and that's coming. We're starting to see our first little ones. So, you know, we'll see how that goes. And we're really excited.
Mm-hmm. So you're bracing for baby season.
Yes. Kelly knows all about baby season.
Okay, Kelly, what's baby season?
Well, baby season is kind of the time of year when we see an influx in animals. So that's when all of your native wildlife will start breeding. So raccoons, possums, squirrels, that's when we'll start to see their babies coming in.
Who finds them?
You know, just the general public very often will find these animals either abandoned or injured. And we see an influx whenever there's a big storm come through and these animals have been blown out of their nests or kind of displaced by the weather. We see a lot of animals that people have assumed have been abandoned. And that's really where our education comes in, is really educating the local public about the habits of natural wildlife.
So if I'm thinking something's abandoned, mm-hmm. you know really what's going on.
Yeah, we always recommend that people give us a call before bringing the animal in. Very often, the parents will leave the animal for several hours, really, to go forage. The babies are generally much safer when mom and dad are not around. It attracts fewer predators.
So what are we talking about specifically?
Very commonly, we see fawns who have been taken away from their parents. The mother deer will actually leave the fawn for up to 12 hours at a time. The fawns don't emit any type of odor, and so they're pretty safe from predators when they're left alone. And they'll lay very still. They won't make any noise. They'll be very calm. And people will often just stumble upon them in their yards. Mother deer have a very strange way of finding what they consider to be a safe place. So that might be under your vehicle in your neighborhood, in a playhouse in your backyard, somewhere that they think the fawn will be safe.
You know, I found one in my yard. I do live on 1 acre in the city, but there's a lot of deer in my, there's a lot, actually a lot of wildlife. And so I saw this deer and I thought, what are you doing here? What do I do? Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, I'll wait for, you know, everything appears safe. Yeah. You know, you don't need, you don't appear to be in distress. Mm-hmm. I'll just leave it alone. And then, you know, I came back later, looked out the window, and it was gone.
Yeah, and very often we'll recommend that people just kind of monitor, but you want to monitor from a distance because a mother deer also won't come back if you're standing near the fawn. And so we, you know, recommend to keep an eye on them. If the fawn is still there after 24 hours, then likely the mother has actually abandoned the fawn. But in most cases, you'll come back in the morning or you'll come back the next day and that fawn will be moved.
So you said the mother has abandoned the fawn. Is that because, and I'm thinking, mm-hmm. I'm a city girl, hit by a car or something happened?
Very frequently, it's because something happened to the mother. Animals have a very strong maternal instinct, and so it's very rare for them to just abandon their offspring for no reason.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I also have raccoons and possums. And,
oh, yeah.
And then, you know, I see some of them flattened in the street, the skunks.
Oh, yes.
You can smell them before you see them. Yeah. And sometimes, and I've seen, is it the possums that carry all their babies on their back?
Mm-hmm.
Like
yes.
10 of them. I mean, you know, it looks like a school bus, you know?
Yeah, they can have up to 14 offspring at a time. And they will, as soon as they leave the pouch, they will ride around on mom's back.
And so if something happens to the mom, you've got all these little babies. What's going to happen to them?
We actually have a pretty high success rate with our possums. They're tube fed. And so we don't have to worry about things like aspiration that we would with some of the other animals. We have to syringe feed.
So what do you get mostly in the spring? If you, I mean, because every spring, you know, okay, we're going to get our number one supply of possums, raccoons, squirrels, deer.
Birds.
Yeah. So we see almost an equal number of mammals and avian species. A lot of songbirds, a lot of doves, a lot of pigeons. Again, most often they're kind of blown out of their nest. Luckily, wildlife naturally kind of comes in waves. So in February is when we'll start to see baby squirrels. Then March, we'll see baby possums. As we get later into the spring, that's when we'll see the raccoons and the skunks.
Mm-hmm. And you know, when you come across the babies, you're like, oh, they're so cute.
Mm-hmm.
And you think, I want to keep
them. They are very
cute. And so people think, I want to keep them?
We do. We actually get quite a few animals that after several months of being hand-raised, people find that they are not as cute as they once were, and they do not make great pets. They are still wild animals, regardless of whether they've been hand-raised. And so we will get quite a few calls of, well, you know, can you give me suggestions on how I can raise this squirrel in my house? We definitely do not recommend that. It is actually illegal to keep animals in your home that are native to Texas. And so we just explain to them, you know, that they do much better if they're on the right formula. We have very specific formulas specifically for these animals. Dog and cat formula really does not contain all the nutrients that they need.
Mm-hmm. And so, but when you take an animal out of its natural environment and then you raise it in your house and pretend it's your pet, what are you doing to that animal when they have to go back to the wild?
Yeah, that can make it very difficult for that animal to be released in the future. The animals that we release need to have a fear of what we consider predator species, which includes humans. So we really need to make sure that they're avoiding us, that they're afraid of other animals before we can release them.
So tell me about the sanctuary. So you get a call from someone, a city person in San Antonio who says, I've encountered this. This animal is in distress and needs your help. So take me through that process, because when I've encountered an injured dog or something, it's very hard. There are a number of agencies, but there's so much. Right. It's hard to find help, and so sometimes you're on your own. Is it that way with wild animals?
I would like to think that we make it much easier for people. We do have a 24-hour hotline service, so there is someone to answer your questions any time of the day. We do recommend that people give us a call. Like Diana mentioned, our location in San Antonio functions as a drop-off location for a lot of the animals we see. So we do encourage that if the animal is contained and if the person calling is comfortable transporting that animal, that they bring them to us so that we can provide them with the care that they need. If the person is unable to bring the animal to us, we do have a very large volunteer base, and we have volunteers who are trained on rescues and picking up animals for us and transport.
So then once you get a city mm-hmm. case, you get the animal to your San Antonio facility on mm-hmm. Bassey Road between San Pedro and Blanco.
Yes.
What happens there?
We have a couple of staff at our San Antonio location and staff in Candelia as well, and they are trained on intake and triage. We make sure that the animal is stabilized. We'll give them fluids, get them acclimated to the artificial formula that they're going to be fed. If there's any wing wrapping that needs to be done or any wound management, that will all be taken care of as soon as that animal arrives. Mm-hmm. From there, we'll get them set up in a warm, quiet, dark area where they will be free from human distraction. We try to make the rooms as quiet and stress-free as possible. If the animal does require veterinary services, that animal will be transported into our Candelia sanctuary. Every evening, we have transport.
And so once they get there, Diana, what happens?
Well, if they have a certain kind of injury or you know, wound, then our veterinarian staff will figure out what is the best animal care protocol to follow to treat whatever injury that animal has. Mm-hmm. And so then a game plan, so to speak, is created for this animal. And then, you know, ultimately the goal is to, if possible, release the animal and get them to where they need to be to do so. And so I will tell you, I've been in nonprofits field since, I'm going to age myself here, but for quite some time and since the late 90s. And this is probably the hardest working staff I've ever been around and most passionate. They just really do everything they can to put the animal first. Mm-hmm. And I have a lot of respect for our animal care staff, our veterinary staff, and they do everything they can to make it possible for the animal to live the life they were intended to. Mm-hmm. That's the key. That's what we always want to, you know, they don't want anything to do with us.
So it was interrupted by a human touch.
At some
and a
point.
Human who either had...
Maybe good intentions.
Good intentions or mm-hmm. sometimes a vicious motive because, you know, you talk about the injuries to animals. What kind of injuries are... You know, I know, I'm sure a lot of them get hit by cars.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen, you know, hit by car, maybe birds accidentally flew into windows. I think we had an opossum the other day that came in that had been shot with a BB gun, had 6 bullets or wounds in her body.
Yeah, especially this time of year and right after hunting season, especially like dove hunting season, we will see a lot of raptors who have been shot. We frequently, year-round, will get adult opossums who have bullet wounds or several bullets in their body.
So were they intentionally shot or they were accidentally shot because they were in the way of somebody shooting at something else?
For the raptors, it's hard to say. People may be shooting at them because they're preying upon birds that they may be feeding. They will tend to, especially in the city limits, stalk bird feeders because there's a large source of food for them. Mm-hmm. Possums and the animals like possums, armadillos, skunks, generally when we see them with bullet wounds, they were intentional.
Somebody just thought, mm-hmm. oh, won't this be sick fun?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, so the possum that we just got in last week actually had 6 babies with her.
When she was shot.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. And so you can get them treated, recovered, and back out there?
Yeah, she's actually doing really well. Possums kind of have amazing adaptability. They're very hardy animals. And so she had several bullet holes in her head, and she's actually doing really well in rehab. So we just kind of treat those wounds and try to be as hands-off as possible.
Our guest this morning, Kelly McCoy. She's the Director of Animal Operations for Wildlife Rescue and Rehabilitation. And Diana Reyes, she is the Chief Executive and Development Officer. So tell me about your place in Candelia, what it's like, because you have now over 200 acres. Mm-hmm. and what's on it. Because as I'm listening to y'all this morning, I'm thinking some animals will never be able to be released in the wild.
Right.
So you're going to keep them for the rest of their natural lives?
Yes. At our sanctuary, we have native animals that are not releasable, and we have non-native animals that obviously couldn't survive in this area because they're not native to this area.
What non-native animals, and how did they get here?
Oh, gosh. We have quite a bit of animal, different species. We have, so several things. We have our, come to mind here. So we have our native animals that can't be released for whatever reason. It could be a bird that can't fly. It could be we have a squirrel that has no eyes, but functions very well, gets around very well. Obviously would not survive out in the wild by himself. So he lives in our sanctuary. So, native animals that can't be released because of injuries, that's who lives in our sanctuary. You know, some of the animals. Other animals are, we have a farmed animal sanctuary. So we have pastures with about, how many? We have about almost about 200 farmed animals right now.
Yes, 202.
Yeah, 202. And so we have cows, sheep, goats. We have also some llamas. We have some mules or donkeys. Our goal is for them to just kind of live their life in peace. One of the favorite things I love when I get to work every day is you drive up to a pasture and you just see all these different kinds of species of animals that are just kind of doing their own thing. It's a really great sight to see. And then we also have the non-native animals, and those are animals that end up with us because they were in the pet trade or came from private hands. Again, people thinking that they could have a bobcat or a lemur or a spider monkey or a capuchin as a pet. And as Kelly mentioned earlier, these are wild animals. You know, they're not intended to be pets.
Why would anyone even think you could have a wild animal as a pet? Can you explain that?
Sure. The non-native, or as it's referred to as the exotic pet trade, is actually, you know, really huge, especially in Texas. It's huge in Missouri, where I'm from, and it really plays on people's emotions. They see this cute baby animal, they think that this animal is going to be a good pet, they can hand raise them, that they'll act like their dog or cat, and that really just is not the case. These animals have not been domesticated just because we're seeing them in these pet auctions. We have over 100 primates, and I would say the majority of them have come from private homes.
There was somebody's good idea that went bad because it was a bad idea from the start.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I know. I'm thinking like Michael Jackson. You know, I'm thinking celebrities have, you know, exotic animals, and
yes,
and that makes people think, oh, isn't that cool?
Yes. Yeah. So unfortunately, these animals have been exploited in the media. They're made to look like they would be cute pets. You see them in TV shows or you see them with celebrities, and they're trained and they're wearing dresses, and that just unfortunately is not the reality.
So when you see that, mm-hmm, what are you thinking?
It's definitely hard to see, especially having worked with these animals, that when they come to us, you can see that they have a clear emotional disconnect to being a true primate. It can be very difficult for us to introduce them to groups of other primates because they just don't really know how to interact.
Because they think, do they think? Do animals think?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, primates are extremely intelligent. And so having them coming out of a pet trade situation where they've been treated as a child instead of a primate, and then trying to learn how to interact with other primates can be really challenging. It can be really sad to see as well when you see them come and they have these emotional instabilities.
Because mm-hmm, mm-hmm, they're thinking, I'm a person. I wear clothes. I get fed. I don't have to find mm-hmm my food. I mean, all of the things that we as people mm-hmm do that animal has been put through. And now it's like, sorry, it's all gone. You're in the wild. This is really what it's supposed to be like.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, and unfortunately, a lot of our social cues and the way that we interact with children are actually seen as aggressive tendencies in some of these animals. So a primate that you're normally smiling at, and then all of a sudden another primate shows his teeth, is not the same meaning.
Mm-hmm. And well, that brings up, you know, animals bite. And I'm mm-hmm sure they bite people who are trying to help them.
They do. I worked with dogs and cats, and I will say that I definitely received more injuries working with dogs and cats than I ever have with wildlife.
Yeah.
The majority of these animals are really just trying to get away from you. Mm-hmm. So the wild animals, they don't want to have to bite. Skunks don't want to have to spray you unless they're left with no other option. So mm-hmm their instinct is going to be to remove themselves from the situation.
Well, this is so interesting. So how can people help you? I know you've got a couple of events coming up. One is on the 15th. What is that?
Yes, we're excited about our upcoming event. It's called Win a Wild Ride to Save Wildlife. It's held at the Witte Museum, and we will be having a grand prize drawing of a 2018 Audi A3. And so people can buy a ticket. It's $250. We're only selling 350 tickets, so there's only 350 chances to win this car. And it's also is admittance for two people. And so it's going to be a great evening. We have some wonderful restaurants and caterers who have donated some great vegetarian dishes. And we'll have a live and silent auction. We have a live band. And so we're really excited. It's going to be a great time. And of course, all the money we raise is going to go directly to taking care of our animals.
So what are some of the other things you do? Because you are funded solely by private donations.
Yes, we actually receive no government dollars. We are very fortunate to have just really committed donors. But of course, that you know, we're always having needs, facing, looking to raise dollars. Most of our dollars, again, come from individual donors and from foundations and some corporations. We have some great partners, long-term partners. And so, you know, our biggest needs, of course, are dollars, but we can always use, you know, items that animals need while they're in our care, bedding, blankets, pillowcases, different things like that that can help us in caring when we're caring for the animals. And also a big way to help is becoming a volunteer. We rely on our volunteers so much. We wouldn't be able to do what we do without them. We have about over 100 dedicated volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll do anything from socialization, you know, working with our companion animals, because we do have some cats at our sanctuary in Candelia. And so they can do that. Laundry, washing dishes, doing the daily transport that we do.
Mm-hmm.
Just there's so many ways that people can get involved. And we really, really need that, especially during that March and September window of baby season.
Baby season. That, yeah. So that's a big time. And so how old, what do you ask of your volunteers as far as age and commitment and things like that?
Well, you know, we're because of what we do, there's a little bit more involved training than you would probably see with other organizations. So we have two actual volunteer orientations that we ask volunteers to come to. It's an intro orientation and then an information session, and really just gives you a lot of information about who we are, what we do, why we're here, and then conversations and training on protocols. We can't do what we do without strict protocols. Especially, you know, on the animal care side, our staff is very trained, and volunteers also need to have that training. We even take it a step further and have rescue level trainings from 1 to 2, 3, and 4 levels. And then we have a specific baby bird, baby mammal training. And that is really going to take people's time a little bit, because you really have to be committed to learning that specific skill set, because it is really difficult. And it does take a certain skill set to be able to take care of our baby birds and baby mammals in the right way.
So what are some of the misconceptions people have about wildlife rescue and rehabilitation, or wildlife rescue in general?
I think, you know, there's been so much urban development that, I when someone sees wildlife, particularly like we've seen a lot of, there's been a lot of conversation about coyotes, for instance. I think Kelly just talked to an HOA about coyotes. There's this immediate fear: they're going to eat my child, they're going to eat
run
my
off
pet,
with my neighbor's
they're going
dog,
to
yes.
run off with my neighbor's dog, when that's really not the case. I mean, they don't want anything to do with us. They are just trying to live the life they've been put in. And the reality is that we've probably encroached in their space, and they were probably there first.
Mm-hmm.
And so the best thing we can do is leave them be. There are some other things, obviously, don't leave food outside, cover your trash cans, make sure lids are on there tight. If you do have a small dog or a cat that you let outside, you know, do it during the day and more than in the evening, you know, things like that. But people, this immediate reaction is get this animal out of here. Let's call the cops or call animal control
or get a gun
when you don't really have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just 9 times out of 10, they will just move along at some point.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, you know, you talk about that. I think about rabies and foxes and things that carry rabies. I think there's a fear of that.
Mm-hmm.
So how real is that fear?
Yeah, so rabies is actually very rare in this area. There are very few cases of rabies each year, especially when, you know, dogs and cats are so highly vaccinated against rabies. And the wildlife we see, bats are the most common species to carry rabies, and even that's a pretty low percentage. So when you're seeing a coyote in your neighborhood, or a fox, or a raccoon, or a skunk, or those animals that cause people to have those fear of rabies, it's a very, very low chance that that animal is carrying that disease.
You know, when I saw a fox like walking down my street, I was, you know, freaked out first. I was like, that's a fox, because it looked like a dog with a tail, you know, a dog cat with a fluffy tail. And it was, you know, the gate. I am a city girl. And so, and then I thought, it was nighttime. It's probably looking for food, huh?
Yes.
Is that?
Yeah. So especially this time of year, as we get into our spring season and our baby season, we'll get a lot of calls of, there's this raccoon and he's out during the day, he must be rabid. And that's not the case, especially during breeding season, when these animals are looking for a good place to nest, when they're trying to forage, so they have a store of food. You will see them during the day. That is part of their natural behavior.
Okay, and then one more question. What should you do when you hit a deer with your car?
Yeah, we definitely recommend people give us a call, or at least to stop and see if the deer is still alive. A lot of people will hit the deer and then just leave, and we'll get calls from maybe the next person who drove by, and they don't know how long the deer has been there. Please just stop and make sure that the deer is okay. A lot of times, you know, they're just kind of stunned and they'll get up and walk away. And if the deer is not okay, please give us a call.
And how do people reach you?
Our 24-hour hotline is 830-336-2725. Like I said, that's 24 hours a day. There's somebody there to answer that phone. And we also have an info email that we respond to throughout the day as well.
And your website?
Our website is wildliferescue.org. And
wildlife-rescue.org.
Yeah.
wildlife-rescue.org. Yes. Okay. And that's so they can reach you that way. Mm-hmm. And then as far as your event, your Win a Wild Ride to Save Wildlife. How do they hook up with you on that? Because that's coming up March 15th at the Whitty Museum.
They can call that same number, 830-336-2725, extension 308. And we'll have that's the right person to connect with if you're interested in buying tickets or being a sponsor, because there are some sponsorship opportunities. And we hope people will come out. We're really excited about it. This is, I believe, our 27th. Year in doing it. We took a year off last year, and our donors were like, what happened to Win a Wild Ride? So we brought it, you know, brought it back. We did some things a little different last year because it was our 40th anniversary. Mm-hmm. But we're excited about the event. We still have tickets available, not a whole lot. I'll say we're close to selling them all. So if people are interested, we ask that you give us a call, and we're happy to take care of it for you. You can also go online at that same website, wildlife-rescue.org, and purchase your tickets online as well.
And I just have to note, because I got this in the release that y'all sent me.
Yeah.
Since 1977, Wildlife Rescue has taken in over 200,000 animals, and 10,000 more are brought to y'all every year for rehabilitation and release back into their natural habitats.
Yeah, it's a great need. Those are pretty big numbers. We get about 10,000 animals a year. We get over 11,000 phone calls a year as well. You know, 11,000 calls of somebody wanting assistance, whether it's come out and help this animal, or what do I do if, you know? And so we're always willing and able to help. And one thing we're doing this year too is we're actually starting educational workshops for adults. Living with urban wildlife is a topic, and they're free to the community. We'll have some in March, and then we'll have some again in July.
Now, will they be at your San Antonio location or in Candelia?
At our San Antonio location on Bassey Road at our education center. You can find out that information on our website as well. But again, it's free and open to the public, and our animal care staff will be there to help answer any questions, because you know it's important to know what to do when you see an animal, just as we've talked about today. And living with urban wildlife in this time of development is just something we all have to learn more about and educate people about. So we're really excited about bringing those workshops to people as well.
Thank you for coming by this morning. Our guest, Diana Reyes, she's the Chief Executive and Development Officer for Wildlife Rescue and Rehabilitation, and Kelly McCoy, Director of Animal Operations.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.